Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a paid advertisement for BetterHelp. With so many things vying for your attention, it's easy to push life's struggles to the back of your mind and keep things bottled up. And when things have piled up high enough, I understand all too well how much harder it can be to get things off your chest. But I also know that a problem shared is a problem halved. And this is where BetterHelp can come in. Therapy can provide you with a safe space to open up and work through whatever's been weighing you down, so you can focus on showing up as your best self every day. As the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Visit betterhelp.com/tortoise to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/tortoise.
Tortoise. Hello, it's Basha here. Nikki Allen was 7 years old when she was brutally murdered in 1992. Her killer lived a few floors above Nikki in the same block. He was known to the police. He was the kind of offender who should have been caught, but it took over 30 years for David Boyd to be found guilty. Three Doors Down tells the astonishing story of Nikki's mum, Sharon Henderson, and her 30-year campaign to get justice for her daughter's killing. It shines a light on police behaviour and the treatment of working-class women, and it's a personal tale of trauma and resilience in the face of systemic police failure that couldn't be more timely.
David Boyd, stand up.
It's a Tuesday afternoon in late May, in a packed courtroom at Newcastle Crown Court.
For the murder of Nikki Allen, on the 7th of October of 1992, the sentence of the court is one of life imprisonment. You will serve a term of 29 years...
The judge, Mrs. Justice Lambert, is sentencing David Boyd, a known child sex offender, for the murder of 7-year-old Nikki Allen nearly 31 years ago, in 1992.
A further aggravating factor is the vicious and brutal nature of your attack.
She sentences him to life in prison and rules that he must serve a minimum of 29 years. Boyd is now in his mid-50s. It seems unlikely he'll ever be freed. The jury had taken 90 minutes to reach a guilty verdict after a trial which lasted a month.
Nonetheless, you are providing a statement in which you gave yourself a false alibi. I must, of course, consider...
There's normally tension on the press bench when the jury comes back, but not this time. As it filed in, the reporter from a local paper who had sketched out his copy on his phone typed guilty in a text to his newsroom and held his finger over the key, poised to send. When the verdict was read out, there was uproar in the public gallery. Cries of yes and you bastard. Nikki Allen's family punching the air shouting thank you to the jury.
Our commitment has always been to establish who was responsible and to bring them to justice. New forensic techniques has been key in this investigation in identifying David Boyd. And the residents of Sunderland have also played their part in ensuring justice for Nikki and her family. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank each and every resident who provided us with their DNA. Without their help, today's conviction would not have been possible.
On the steps of the court, Deputy Chief Constable Lisa Theaker, who led the investigation, paid tribute to Nikki's family and praised the commitment of her team in tracking down David Boyd. It looks like a victory for Theaker and her team, and for policing in general. But there's a different version to this story.
Started looking at Nikki's case when I knew things weren't right.
George Heron was, he looked weak, he looked feeble, he looked pale, greasy hair, big glasses. He was kind of your stereotypical child murderer, if you like.
When I started reading the article and I seen his face, I was like, oh my God, that's him that had grabbed me when I was 13.
What's the point of the police force when we're doing all their jobs?
Sharon Henderson, Nikki's mother, has been trying to find her daughter's murderer for 30 years.
I need it to do myself because nobody's gone to come out there, Sharon, now and get justice for your man. You have to go out there yourself and do it.
And yet the basic facts of the case are remarkably straightforward. David Boyd lived in the same block of flats as Sharon and her daughters, and three doors away from Nikki's grandparents, the place from where she first went missing. David Boyd was known to the police. He had a conviction for breach of the peace in 1986, after approaching four girls, aged 8 to 10, grabbing one and asking for a kiss. In the same year, he exposed himself three times to a woman. In 1987, he was again investigated for showing his genitals, this time to a 15-year-old girl. In both these last instances, the police recorded the incident, but took no further action. David Boyd is the kind of offender who should have been caught. So why wasn't he? Why did it take 26 years for the police to interview him as a suspect in Nikki's murder? What does Sharon's story tell us about Britain's police and the way they treat working-class women, in particular single mothers like Sharon? I'm Julie Bindle. From Tortoise, this is Three Doors Down, a murder, a mother, and a 30-year investigation. Episode 1, Missing. I was visiting my mum and dad in Darlington in June 2006. I remember sitting in their backyard reading the local paper. The first thing that grabbed my attention on an inside page was a photograph of a woman kneeling by a child's grave. The headline read, "Mum's Bid to Dig Up Daughter." A mother has threatened to dig up her daughter's body in a bid to bring her killer to justice. I read the name of that blonde-haired woman kneeling by the graveside, Sharon Henderson. I was immediately drawn to her story. I wanted to meet her and find out what had happened for her to be threatening to dig up her own daughter's body. A few weeks later, we had dinner in a Chinese restaurant. Her blonde hair is tied back off her face, and there is a foreboding look in her dark blue eyes. Over special fried rice and sesame prawn toast, neither of which Sharon touched, and Diet Cokes, I got to know Sharon. Sharp and never missing a trick, she impressed me immediately. A woman who had clearly been underestimated and keenly aware of how and why she had been treated by those she named professionals. There's a steely determination to Sharon, which is apparent from when you first meet her. When you speak with her, she's the kind of person who doesn't fidget, who holds eye contact, and who tells you straight if she doesn't agree with you. Sharon told me about how she'd written in vain to the Queen, Prime Ministers, and members of the House of Lords, and anyone else she could think of that might help with Nikki's case. And she has one single focus, to get justice for Nikki. Sharon speaks to Nikki every day. Nikki was a happy, mischievous child, with a toothy grin and shoulder-length light brown hair. She tells me about the personal toll her daughter's death has on her, how she struggles on occasions with her mental health, with excessive drinking and prescribed drugs. But she is determined to get justice. On that evening in 2006, in the Chinese restaurant, we had no idea that it would be another 17 years before there was a conviction. We've been regularly in touch during the intervening years. My partner, Harriet Wistrich, has been Sharon's solicitor for that time too. Growing up in Sunderland in the tail end of the 1960s and 70s, Sharon didn't enjoy an easy life.
I didn't have a mother growing up. I was brought up in care, which I didn't mind from 3 to 14. That's when I went to live in the Guards. I wasn't brought up with a family. I came straight from care. You didn't know your future, that you're going to be a single parent. But we didn't have a sad life. What happy life?
Sharon has said to me repeatedly that in all of the coverage of the death of her daughter, people often forget that before all this, they were a family.
We're a happy little family. I'm definitely not a perfect mother. I tried my best. I wasn't taught how to be a mother, and I right from wrong.
I visit Sharon at her home, a small, neat terraced house in Roker, not far from the sea. I once recall her rolling a cigarette and her telling me about finding out that Lisa Theka, the officer in charge of the investigation, had taken part in the TV programme, Catch a Killer in an Hour.
The second the call comes in, the clock starts ticking. The police have an hour to catch a killer. We need
your... Which made her roar with laughter. Catch a killer in an hour? She started shaking her head and said, she can't even bloody catch a killer in 30 years. Another time she told me that somebody had come along to the victims' rights group that she was involved in. He'd witnessed a tragedy taking place, involving people he didn't know. Sharon paused and said, I suppose some people are so bored they pretend they're victims themselves to come and listen to all the stories and get a free cup of tea and a biscuit. In these moments, I saw the woman who was there before this tragedy happened. Dark, witty, but made vulnerable by events that she had no control over. Sunderland, 1992, is where this story takes place. It's a forgotten corner of Britain, along with the rest of the North East, an area that has never recovered from the recession under the Thatcher government, when the mining and shipbuilding industries disappeared.
We were just a workforce. If you think about it, go back, you know, a couple hundred years, the Northeast was just a workforce. Get in the pits, get on the mines and dig the coal and go and build the ships, and everything was heavy work.
This is Jeff Moon. For decades, he's run the Welcome Tavern, a pub in the heart of the once thriving docks. Overlooking the docks is a working-class housing estate called the Garths, notorious brick silhouettes in the east end of the city. Notorious because there's something of a no-go area for the police. Locals, in particular the men, prefer dealing with neighbour disputes and petty crime themselves. The Garth flats were four floors high and in three blocks that all faced onto a square centre. The flats had verandas, and parents would stand outside smoking and chatting to one another, while keeping an eye on their children playing in the communal area below.
Massive, I mean, community-like spirit within them, you know, by the very structure, the very shape of them. Everybody, you know, you were kind of looking at everybody's house.
Many of Jeff's regulars lived on the Garth estate.
It was a lot of families. So the Garth was always filled with kids. When I was a kid, like my one nana lived on one side, the other grandmother lived on the other side, and me great aunts all lived the next down, and then the other aunts lived further along. My mum's sister lived next door to her mum. So it was, you could go house to house all as a kid. It was great.
In one of the ground floor flats lived Nikki, her three sisters, and their mum Sharon. It's tea time on a school night. Sharon and Nikki go to see Sharon's father, who lives two floors above them. But Nikki is anxious to go home.
You knew that she was wanting to go back to play with her sisters, basically. She was bored at your dad's.
Mm-hmm. Well, she didn't like the... He had the Hoover on, she didn't like the Hoover.
Nikki is scared of the sound of the vacuum cleaner. So she asks her mum if she can go home before her and see her sisters. Sharon watches her walk the 150 yards across the pathway and down the stairs before she disappears from sight on the ground floor, where she would turn along the corridor and into her own flat. But she never arrives. Sharon's memory of the next few hours is hazy.
I didn't have a clue what was happening. Really didn't. Everything was just... It's really hard to explain.
Sharon is frantic. She's going door to door asking each flat if they've seen Nikki. Her neighbours join in.
Now, there was people out then. It was lively, people out looking then.
It was already a dark autumn evening, but as the search continues, it's getting late.
11, quarter past 11.
So you'd called time?
Oh, yeah, I was, we were upstairs and we just looked out and was like, oh, dear me. And like I say, you could see people out with torches and stuff like that. And just says, oh, the band's missing. And I just said, typically, I hope the band's all right and whatever, yeah.
I mean, it was like before 12 when I'd like come back into where you got after. And then you're like really panicking. And then the police is like said, you cannot move from your door, Sharon.
The block of flats opposite Sharon was known as Burley Garth.
Most of our friends was in Burley Garth, that was in the same class.
So she might have been there.
Nikki and her school friends would play outside between Weir Garth, where she lived, and the facing block of flats.
Well, that's what I thought she was. And, you know, that is, you've got to give people time for, like, checking the bedrooms, checking other beds and that. And I had to stand at people's doors waiting for things like that.
People are out in slippers with torches. Word spreads.
That's one thing, having a tight community, news travels fast. We were upstairs and we just looked out and was like, oh, dear me. You could see people out with torches and stuff like that. And just says, oh, the band's missing. And because it was night, it's like, you know.
It happened that quick. People just, like, come from nowhere.
The time goes on and Nikki still hasn't been found. Sharon is becoming hysterical with worry.
This was about 2 o'clock when I'm thinking this. Somebody's took her from the garth, from the stairs or the arch, thinking it's somebody in a car by then. Because everybody I knew, all our friends had been to all their houses. And then people getting in touch with other people that bands went to the school but didn't live in the garths, lived in the like areas. And then people start to travel out. Then the helicopter comes out and it just can't. I could hear the helicopter, and I'm sure there was a news one. Was one helicopter, I was driving, was round the bend, and that's what they got the doctor, because I was screaming and shouting, because I wanted to get out there, I used to look for Nikki. And there was just this same voice on as if it was a recorder, and I was a copper on a mic, just shouting, Nick, you're going to get wrong. Your mum's waiting for you. At your granddad's. The same things over and over again. Because I thought she might have been frightened. Now, if she'd been outside the garth and come back and seen all this, like, stuff going on and that. And I heard another helicopter and somebody said that was I don't know if they used them days or press.
It was 9:30 at night when Nikki's mother told her to head down a flight of stairs back home from her grandparents' flat.
And you were obviously sick with worry. You'd been given a sedative, presumably, when the doctor came round to keep you calm while the search went on.
It was frightening, but I'm like a zombie. You're just sitting there, like, and just staring. And that's all I remember, the helicopter, all the time. And then the next morning, I remember standing at the sink, and it just seemed like, if I had to, like, draw a picture of it, it's like loads of ants, and that was the people in the garth, me looking down. Just, there was no space, there were just all over the place, people. And then Joan came in with the coat. Now, how did the police not spot the coat? I've been took to that place where the coat was.
Is this Nicky's coat that she came?
Coat and shoes.
Joan found Nicky's coat and shoes.
Well, a lad did, and they picked it up, and Joan carried it to the door. And when I look back, how did the police miss that? I cannot understand.
This was just the beginning of the police's mishandling of the case. Sharon's next memory is in a hospital ward.
And I got took like to hospital then. It was awful lame.
And you were taken away in an ambulance because you realised something had gone horribly wrong. Do you remember what happened next?
I went in, the police wanted to speak to my stepmom and my dad. I was still like in like a daze thing. The put us in a little room. I was just sat there like a zombie on the bed. So the phone went, and of all the people that had to tell me some my bairn was dead was my real mum.
Fina is Sharon's birth mother, but Sharon did not see her as a mother figure. The two had never been close. But it's her birth mother who gives Sharon the news that her own daughter, Nicky, has been murdered.
I just seen all these crowds of people outside the building. And I knew straight, I went, is that where the air found Nicky? And Davey went, yeah, I'm sorry. I just, shaking. That had to stop the car. I was trying to get out and that, kicking the doors and that. And then the police came. And it was them that wanted to not break the news to us.
That Vina had already told Vina, you.
Because everybody saying the fireman carrying Nicky out the back, covered up.
Pause.
Yeah.
The news is overwhelming.
Nicky's tiny body had been found in the derelict old exchange building close to the Weir Garth flats where she disappeared from the previous night. After hundreds had searched all night, Nicky's red shoes and purple coat were recovered outside the old exchange. A short time later, a young teenager ran hysterically from the building after going in and finding Nicky's body. Nicky was hit, hurt, and bundled through a boarded up back window, her head beaten with a brick, stabbed more than 30 times, and dragged dead down into the far corner of the basement and left.
Well, until late this afternoon, they were continuing their search in and around the old exchange buildings. They're looking for what they've described as the blunt instrument that they believe was used to carry out this murder.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
The moment Nicky's body was found, Sharon's life shattered.
basically my word fucked up from them finding her body.
Once things started to settle down and the behaviour of certain individuals and stuff like that, and people soon backed away, but the one thing that didn't falter was the very fact that there was a child that was murdered. That, if anything, kept it just about, you know, sort of floating.
What do you mean, kept what about floating?
The support, if you like.
Right. What Jeff is speaking about here is just the start of what began to unravel with Nikki's case. Some people turned against Sharon when rumours began to spread about where she was on the night of the murder.
People, years ago, everybody believed the media, everybody believed the police.
And what did they believe, though?
Rumours that I was out in a pub, or Nikki was penny for the Guardian, or I was up the Tame drinking, and poor me was standing in the middle of the garth in my dressing gown and jammies, and I remained shaking for me Ben. I'm so glad there was all them witnesses had seen us when I was going door to door looking for Nikki. I didn't give a shit about rumours, but I believe more people would have come forward if the police had worked properly on the case instead of fucking it up. Some people might have come forward by now.
The rumours that Sharon is speaking about are not just local hearsay. There were lies, and they were spread by the very people who should have been investigating the case. I want to know why it took the police 30 years to find the man who killed Nikki. In the next episode, we'll hear how the 24 hours after Nikki went missing were crucial in the investigation.
The cop in charge was briefing the press that Nikki was outside the Boar's Head begging for pennies for Halloween. That's what she was supposed to have been doing. That's where she was supposed to have been abducted from.
This series was reported by me, Julie Bindle. It was written by me and Joanna Humphreys. The producer was Joanna Humphreys. The narrative editor was Gary Marshall. The sound design and original theme is by Tom Kinsella. The executive producer was Jasper Corbett.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.